Today on the podcast, I have a conversation with Sebastian Velasquez. Sebastian is a professional soccer player, and he was born in Medellin, Colombia. And we talk about his life and how he came to the U.S. and worked his way through a number of different professional and soccer levels to get to the MLS, where he was able to play with some of the world's greats, like David Villa of Spain and David Beckham of England. And Sebastian has been able to travel the world playing the game he loves. And in this conversation, you'll hear different challenges and adversity Sebastian had to overcome along the way. His love for his mom and how he really looks up to his mom. And I was fortunate enough to play with Sebastian for a couple years. And he is truly one of the most talented players I've ever seen in person. He's somebody that I've always looked up to, especially his game and the person he is, and the way he has overcome these challenges and adversity within his life. So before we get into the conversation, we got to talk about Engineered Sleep. Engineered Sleep is a mattress manufacturer. They're based out of Greenville, South Carolina. And I can't tell you enough that if you're getting bad sleep and if you're not sure why, looking at your mattress can do a world of difference. And the team at Engineered Sleep, their main goal is making you find the right mattress as easy as possible. And that's not easy, but they'll make it easy for you. So reach out to the team at Engineered Sleep. You can go to their showroom in Greenville, South Carolina, or go visit them on their website, engineeredsleep.com. Use promo code LIVE10. You'll get 10% off your order. But most importantly, reach out to them. Get yourself a new mattress, get your family new mattresses, and you'll start sleeping better and start performing better on a daily basis. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Sebastian Velasquez. Welcome to Live Life in Motion, where the goal is to bring you conversations that give you the power of education so you can use those tools to optimize your life on a personal and professional level, to better yourself, your community, and those around you. Sebastian, dude, so glad to have you here, man, in person. I know you're traveling the world, but you're in Greenville. Glad to have you here. We're going to tell your story. What's up?
Nothing much, man. Thanks for having me. We've been trying to do this for a very, very long time. So it's exciting. It's good to see you, bro. You look great.
Thank you, man. I think you were in in Israel, I think, when I launched it. Where were you this time last year?
I think, yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I was in Israel.
I was like, man, I don't know if the signal will be good enough to do it remotely. So I'm glad we got you in Greenville. But I want to kind of hop into your story. And first off, congrats. El Paso just announced coming back next year.
Another year going to El Paso. It's going to be exciting.
Let's go. But you were born in Colombia. Is that right?
Born in Medellin, Colombia, when I was... Basically, I moved to the U.S. when I was 2 or 3 years old.
And your parents were together then?
They were not. They were separated. My dad had already come to the U.S., I'm guessing looking for another life. And my mom basically got a visa because of the whole thing that was going on with Escobar and all that. We kind of got like this, some weird visa we were able to get. And then we came here and then we ended up staying.
In Greenville?
Greenville, South Carolina.
What's your first memory of playing soccer in Greenville?
First memory, to be honest, the first memory I have was I was in Traveler's Rest at my dad's apartment. And this memory always comes up to me because I was in this factory's big, you know how these factories, they have like big areas of land?
Yeah.
I was kicking the ball back and forth with one of my dad's best friend. And then a guy comes up in a little 4x4 Ford and it's like, hey, do you have a team? And I was like, no, I don't have a team. He's like, do you want to play on a team? And I said, yes. And that's when I started my career at Berea Fusion.
Dang, boy. That's back in the day. So your mom ended up moving to Greenville because your dad was already here?
Correct. Yeah, my mom ended up moving here.
Good parents, man.
Unbelievable. My mom was a trooper, man.
She's a legend.
She's a legend.
Dude, so first team at Berea. And I was talking with Strep earlier, one of our good buddies, and he said he wanted me to ask you about street soccer because he was like, that was probably one of the earlier stages for Sebastian to get noticed. Or like, you were playing street soccer. I think it was called Mexicali.
He's correct.
Is that right?
So this is what's funny. This was a bar slash club slash outside food truck slash everything you can imagine. And then they made a little street soccer tournament on the side of it. And so everybody, they started, you know what they did? They ended up putting benches because the place started getting so packed because everybody just wanted to watch these games and drink and eat and all that good stuff. So Mexicali became probably like the place where everyone in Greenville started realizing who I was, or at least had to see the talent that I had. And these were grown men. Everyone was grown men. They would put their little money into it. They're putting their rent money on it. And so my dad's restaurant, Stacks Original, ended up putting a team into it. And it was basically a ton of my cousins, my dad, his brother. And then I always asked to play, but they would tell me no.
How old were you, think?
Right, I was 13, 12 or 13. And then there's one day, I think there was a couple players missing and they needed an extra one. And I got the chance to play, and I just started killing it.
Dude. Dang.
I had like 3 or 4 goals, and then like, oh, he has to play on the team.
They started
then,
paying you?
Huh? No, I wasn't getting paid at that time. No money. I was getting just a little arepa after the game, getting something to eat, and that was it. But we started killing it. And what's funny is we ended up champions of the tournament.
I'm not surprised.
We had to do what we had to do.
In your early school years, so where'd you go to middle school? Where'd you go to elementary school?
Berea Elementary, Berea Middle, and then Greenville High. That's why we used someone else's address so I could go to that school.
That's how you got in?
That's how I got in.
Nice.
We spoke to the principal. A ton of the guys from the team, because you know we were all at club soccer. We all went to the same club soccer teams, but I was lower age.
Yeah.
And we were like, how do we get you to Greenville? And I was like, you guys live in like on Augusta Road. I'm living in over in Lily Street in Berea. I'm like, there's no way. So I got that special permission and went and asked, and they said we needed an address. And then somebody gave me their, you know who I think gave me the address? Blair.
Was it Blair? I thought it might be like Manning or something. I wasn't sure.
Manning. It was Manning. It's between Blair and Manning. One of them two gave me their address. And then from there, we were good to go.
And I was, as I was talking with Strep earlier, I was like, I don't know how the hell we got into Greenville High.
Yeah, no. I wasn't living in.
Hey, we were recruiting.
That's what it's about, dude. That's what it's about. It was fun though.
With how was your at home life as a kid? Like, how were your parents' relationships? Like, how was that? Did you have mentors? Was it your, you know?
I would have to say that my mentor was basically my mother. My mother is just, she's kind of very just old school, hardworking. Come home, had her 7-to-5 job every day, and everything we had was because of her. She bought a house. She had 2 cars,
mm-hmm.
which for a single mother and kind of busting her butt to get everything she had, it was kind of impressive. On top of that, then after her work, she would have to drive home as quickly. I always arrived 30 minutes late to every single practice. Like, that was the rule. Like, everyone knew I could arrive late was because coach knew that my mom was the only person that could take me to training.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the lifestyle. I just kind of admired her because of her hard work, admire her of what she would do for me, and admire her of how she was creating her own future. But it took a toll on her. It definitely took a toll on her. I've had some bad experiences since in my household of where I could see what it was, all this work and not being able to just enjoy herself was doing to her.
Nice. So you were able to recognize that as a kid? Like, my mom was working her butt off?
Yeah, it was very easy to recognize. You know, it was difficult to see because, like, for babysitters and stuff. And I think that's where my story starts of where I had so much trouble through my childhood growing up was because she was leaving me at certain places by myself or with certain people. And then my life was, I was kind of creating my own life without really realizing all this was going to affect me in the future. And I knew that if she was dropping me off at somewhere, it was because she had to get to work.
Yeah.
Or if she had to leave me by myself, it was because she had to get to work. So at the end of the day, I knew, I was conscious of the fact that everything she was doing is because she had to work and put bread on the table. And that's kind of where I have always said that my dream is to take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's been nothing else around.
Because she was doing that, all that stuff for you. And your sister, right? You have a little sister?
I have a sister, but my sister's not on my, it's on my dad's side.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. So my sister was born with my dad and his, another wife he had.
Gotcha. Was there obviously with club soccer, right? And I know club soccer is expensive. Like, you know, how, that process of getting into the club game? Is there scholarships? Is there, like, how was your mom, like, the relationship with the coaches? Like, how does that kind of work?
It was a blessing for me. That's why I think I have so much love for Greenville, because a lot of times my everyone knew my mom didn't have the funds.
Yeah. She was working her butt off for you.
She was working her butt off, but she was living paycheck to paycheck. You know, when you play for these club soccer teams, you're having to pay. You're trying to get 3-4 racks out of your pocket to be able to travel to the tournaments, play in the best tournaments, get seen in the best leagues, best tournaments and all that. And you know what the teams would do? The teams that were on, the people that knew me, a lot of these people are from Greenville High. Like, I mean, Manny was on my team. I played with a couple more guys that were from East Side, a couple more guys that were from Riverside. And their families would all come together and they would raise money and they would pay for my applications, for my registration, for my uniforms, for my tournament fees, all that stuff. I was always taken care of.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why I kind of always come back to Greenville, just to kind of see everybody, always thank them beforehand, like face to face. And I've even done posts on Facebook, like naming person per person, because I know a lot of times you'll see people become successful and people have different minds of the way they run things or the way they do things. And they'll say, oh, I made it all by myself.
Yeah.
And I know in my mind, I never made it by myself. Like, that's, I had a lot of people.
Very rarely the case. Somebody makes it all by themselves. To your credit, and like you said about Greenville's, I mean, I love Greenville, right? I've spent some time away and I'm back here, but I do feel like people have your back. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what, people will be there for you. They'll be there to talk to you. They'll be there to support you. They'll be there to help you out to get on the team. Like, whatever you got to do, the community of Greenville usually will have your back. What's the time that you remember your career kind of taking off? Like, getting some publicity, or like, you walk up to the field and everybody's like, holy shit, there's Sebastian. Like,
what do you mean as far as publicity? What, as high school? Because, I mean, there's different. You know, people started realizing I was good. Like, let's say for Mexicali, that was a different market because it was just a whole bunch of old dudes that like drinking and stuff. I think high school and club soccer was when I started getting known as a player that had potential, because I would have like between 20 to 25 goals per season. Mm-hmm. I was in the best tournaments and I was being the golden boot of every tournament. So at least as far as club level, Disney Cup was huge for me. I remember I got Golden Boot in Disney Cup.
Yep, I remember that.
And then high school, my freshman year,
yeah,
I came into Greenville High. Everyone talked about some Spanish kid that was coming to Greenville High. And then we killed it. Our team was amazing. We had an incredible team. We went to all the tournaments. We won the tournaments. The only thing is we lost our first year, and then we won sophomore year.
Yeah. You scored something. I don't know how many goals you had that freshman year, but it was like,
I don't know either. I know I had a ton of goals. Like, I was 60, all American.
Dude, I don't know.
Yeah, I had a ton of goals. Like, and so during those times is kind of when people were like, that kid could be the real deal. I don't know if they're saying that he was the real deal, but everybody was like, that kid's a baller.
During these years, were there any times you were like hiding any depression or like anxiety or anything, like mental health that wise? Because I remember you, right? You were always like super energetic. We were like always boys. And it was always like, you always had a smile on your face, right? But knowing you, I mean, there's probably some things going on behind the scenes.
Of course, yeah. I think, you know, I live life in a way that I always try to bring something positive to people's life. Every time I get a chance to speak to someone or say hello to someone, I try to smile and kind of just give them that sense of like, there's no danger. I want you to see I'm happy. I hope that my smile can make your day better or whatever. I've always kind of lived my life like that. My mother's the same way. But obviously behind the scenes, there was a lot going on. I can pick out maybe 3 or 4 moments that were very, very traumatic for me. I didn't know they were traumatic during those periods. Sure. I mean, I think when I was young, the biggest one for me was when I was a kid and I was being taken care of by a family member. And this family member did something to me that left me traumatized, that I didn't trust any of my family members after that. Another one would be when my mother almost committed suicide, where I came back from playing a game and I come home and I always had my own key. I opened the door and my mom's passed out on the floor and I thought she was dead. And when when I started, my immediate reaction was to put cold water on her. And I'll never forget that. I picked her up, put her in my hands. I threw her in the tub. Well, not threw her, but yeah, laid her on the tub.
Got her there as quick as you could.
Got her as quick as could. Put cold water on her head. And she started reacting. I don't know why I did that, but I knew always that cold water was a sense of trying to wake people up. So I did that. And then she started coughing and then she started throwing up. And apparently she had overdose on some pills she was taking for depression that I didn't know she had depression.
Yeah.
I didn't know until that moment. And we had a serious conversation. That's basically when she made the decision to move back to Colombia because I had just gone off to college and she didn't want to live by herself in a house and just keep working. And I was like, you need to go back to Colombia and be close to the family. Those two moments were probably two of the biggest moments that changed my life forever. And I was like, all right, I need to do something with my life. I need to make this and that. And then once I was in the pros, I would have to say is once the person that had did this stuff to me that changed my life as a kid had died, because I never had that opportunity to confront or talk about it. And so there's definitely things behind the scenes. Now, at the end of the day, I think the most important thing is, like I always say, I want people to always remember me as that humble dude, just laid back, funny, can smile. All that. Because anytime you see me, I'm always smiling. And people are like, why are you always smiling? And I'm just like, I'm just chilling.
And now you got straight teeth.
Yeah, back in the day, I had strep always is like, dude, what your mom feed you? Dynamite? And I'm like, this guy.
Dude, those times, like you said, you were a kid, so like you didn't know. You had nothing, no control over that, right? But it's a testament of who you are to the person you are today, right? And a lot of that goes to your mom. And there's a time when you were getting out of high school, I think, and, you know, getting out of the club scene where you had a tryout in Spain, right? Was it in Spain?
Correct. It was the biggest tryout I've ever had in my life, which was Barcelona Football Club. So
which is absurd.
Absurd, yeah. Absurd. People don't... I was talking this to the other day to a couple kids because what I've been doing the last couple days, I've been training with a team called CASA.
Mm-hmm. Out of Anderson or Clemson?
Clemson.
Yeah.
Unbelievable coach to have. Unbelievable coach, and his sessions are incredible. And so I've been training with them, and I was talking to them about, coach had me have a word about it. And I was telling them the opportunity right now for Americans in football is unreal. Like, they're taking American young players and they're putting them all over Europe.
Yep.
You'll see them debuting in the top tournament. And social media didn't exist back then when I went on Barcelona trial. So I was like, do you imagine if social media would have existed when I went to trial on Barcelona? Like, a random kid from Greenville, South Carolina is going off to...
How'd you get the tryout?
So this story is interesting. I was changing these tubes with a jackhammer at Stacks Original with my dad. So all the gas tubes needed to be removed and we needed to put new pipes in. So I'm helping my dad do all of this. And I'm getting crushed by this jackhammer.
And you're what, like junior, senior in high school?
I'm a junior. Junior or senior. And I was 16. So I think it was like junior year. And so I remember Anthony Solomon from CIS. Uh-huh. My man, shout out to Speedy.
He's the man.
He's the man. He's the best for me. And he walks into the restaurant and he's like, do you want to become a pro? And I was like, yeah, of course. I was like, you think I want to be doing this? And he's like, there's a trial going on at USC Upstate. It's closed. No one knows about it. They're bringing players from all over the world. And we've spoken about you and we want you in there. And he's like, do you want to go do it? And I said, of course. So I left right then and there, got my stuff, and I had to go to the college and stay there in the dorms for like 2 weeks. Steve Archibald. If you look up Steve Archibald played from 86 to 88 in Barcelona Football Club. He was the Pichichi, which means he was the leading goal scorer of Barcelona for those times. He still lives in Barcelona. His kids plays for the academy. I'm actually still very good friends with him. So Steve did this trial, and he had an opportunity to choose the players he wanted to take, yada, yada, yada. We played a game, and I had scored and this and that. And next thing you know, at the end of the camp, he's like, I want to take you. You're the player that I'm going to take overseas. And so the plan, he was like, where do you want to play? And I was like, I think I would do very well in Spain.
you know, technical players, smaller players, just very good with their feet and everything. So, and I was like, but my dream is to play in Barcelona. The plan was I was going to go to a third division team there, do my trial there. If things worked out, then obviously try to move forward up the ranks on different.
Which that's how a lot of the guys come up.
That's how a lot of the guys come up. So what's funny is we went to go watch the Barcelona B reserves, watch them play the final. And we're playing and we're watching. And I'm looking. He's looking at me and this and that. We're watching the game on TV. And he's like, I've seen you play, and I've seen you play train for 2 weeks. He's like, you can play on that team. And I was like, ha-ha. I was just laughing it off, acting stupid about it. And I was like, yeah, sure. And next thing you know, 2 days after, I'm in a Barcelona uniform at La Masia training with the U15s. I'm in there for the first 2 or 3 days with the U15s, and then next thing you know, they bump me up to the U17s. And then we played a scrimmage, the U15s against the U17s, but I was on the U15s team. I was the 16, 17-year-old playing on the U15s.
Got it.
We tie them 1-1, and I'm the one that scores. I chipped the keeper with my right foot. I've never shot the ball with my right foot. It was just working out perfect. They moved me up to the third team. So I'm with Jonathan Dos Santos, which was just at L.A. I'm with Mark Muniesa, Rafinha before he gets traded. I'm with a couple of the big players that blew up after I had left. And yeah, I was there for three or four more days. And then they're like, he has a lot of good stuff we like. Can he stay for 6 months? But I only had a visa for 15 days, so I couldn't stay for 6 months because I wasn't an American citizen.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so that opportunity fell out at that point.
Dang, dude.
Crazy. And crazy.
I mean, I believe you. I mean, I know you had the talent to perform over there, but was that did that have any effect on your college recruiting in the U.S.?
You know, it's crazy. It all had an effect. The fact that I had dropped out of school had a full effect on everything going on with my career.
So for you, when did you drop out of school? You drop out of Riverside?
Eastside. I dropped out at Eastside because I wanted to play with Miguel at Eastside.
Got it.
So I had to sit out. You know, they had that rule where you have to sit out 1 year. So while I'm not playing, at some point, I think I was just starting to have like lots of downfall mentally. I think the fact I wasn't playing, watching high school games in and out without playing was just starting to kill me. And that, I think that's when I started realizing that I was kind of like an impulsive dude.
Yeah.
Like I would just make quick decisions without thinking about what the consequences was. And that's why I ended up, when I got the trial for Barcelona, which was in that time, I was like, I'm not going back to school. And my mom didn't know. It took her about, it was one day she came back early for some odd reason. She came back early from work and she sees me playing Need for Speed in my room. And I had lost and I kicked a hole in the wall. And as soon as she opened the door, she was like, what are you doing here? And I was like, no, I felt sick and this, and I was lying. She went to the school to find out, and it was that I had dropped out.
Dang.
Yeah, I got in a lot of trouble for that one. But then I explained the situation. I was going to Barcelona, so it kind of saved me.
But, I mean, I remember being at South Carolina and telling the coaches there, like, you got to, like, get Sebastian. You got to go recruit Sebastian. Was there a bunch of interest from bigger names? I mean, I know, like, Clemson had some interest. I don't know if South Carolina reached out, but obviously you had this skill. Right, to play at these schools.
Oh, yeah. I had a lot of reach out. I'll never forget. I had Wake Forest, UCLA, Connecticut, Clemson. South Carolina did reach out. Yeah, South Carolina. A school from Georgia. I think it's Georgia Southern.
Mm-hmm.
Those were probably the top ones that I can remember. And Furman University. Furman was
probably one. And they're great, dude.
Great school. Phenomenal school. But when I left and dropped out and all that, it kind of just disappeared because everyone didn't know what happened to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it killed everything because I had gotten all these offers when I was a freshman in college.
High school.
In high school. Because I remember I did a walk-on to Furman University to go, not a walk-on, but you know, when you go and see the campus and all that, I did one of those. Official visit with Furman. And Doug really wanted me. But Doug didn't believe that my grades were good. And I showed him my grades, and he was like, oh, my God, you can actually get into the school on academics as well. I had very good grades. I was a good student.
Yeah, I believe it, dude. But then you ended up at Spartanburg Methodist somehow.
So I drop out. I go do the trials. Doesn't work out. I wait another year to get another visa. I go back to Spain to Espanol.
That's right. I remember that.
They do a thing called the draft where they get players from all over the world and then they just train them for 2 weeks and they choose players. And in the tournament, everyone was amazed. I played against Villarreal. I played against two other teams. And everybody was amazed by this left-footed kid, which was me. But I was already at that point. I was 19. I mean, I was 18. Sorry. I was 18. So I was 16 when I did a trial. Barca, 18. And they were like, we're looking for 15, 16. So they ended up getting this guy named Thierry Bifoma, which is a good friend of mine. And yeah, he went up the ranks and ended up debuting for them.
Hey, but, you know, I mean, some of that didn't work out. But in your credit, right, again, you find your way onto Spartanburg Methodist and absolutely kill it. And I know you're, I think you were there for 2 years?
I was there for two seasons, yeah.
Two seasons, like scoring
55 goals,
50-something goals, 30-something assists in two seasons. That's like Messi numbers or some shit. And then the MLS Super Draft comes around and you're the first player ever drafted from a school like Spartanburg Methodist.
So, yeah. So, the crazy thing is, so this is what happened. So, when I come back to Greenville, I have nothing. I don't have school. I don't have anything else going for me. I spoke to Miguel. Obviously, you know, Miguel is like my best friend since we're like, and he's, I was like, where do you go to school? He's like, Spartanburg Methodist. He's like, I can help you get in. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, I'll speak to the coach, see if we can get you in.
Nice.
Coach, the school does everything in their power to make this happen. They're like, yo, this kid is good. This kid's legit. He can help us, yada, yada, yada. And they ended up doing it. Dan Canelli did everything in his power to get me into SMC. And that's what ended up happening. I didn't get a dorm. So what I ended up doing was sleeping on a bed that I inflated under my friend Miguel's bed on the dorm. So I would jump out through the window at a certain time and then I'd jump back in and then I'll sleep there.
Really?
That's how, every day. That's what I did. I would jump through a window or I'd jump through the air things.
Because you couldn't sleep in there? You weren't supposed to?
No, there's only two people per dorm. And oh, you have my to have goodness. A dorm scholarship. I didn't have a dorm scholarship. I just had a food scholarship and academic scholarship and book scholarship. So I didn't have anything that had to do with housing on campus. My housing was off campus. So I bought a bed, would inflate it. Well, would inflate it. It was always inflated. And we would put like these covers over the dorm. You know how the dorm beds are a little higher?
Yeah, yeah.
We'd put these blankets that make it cover the thing. And I would sleep there every day. I would jump out through the window at a certain time because they had like, I don't know, like what are they calling, like dorm police or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like RAs or something.
RAs, that's what they are. And I'll jump back through the window like at a certain time when I knew they were gone. And then I'll just go in my bed and go to sleep.
Dang.
And so I played, yeah, junior college. Scored 55 goals, 33 assists.
In two seasons.
Clemson University came offering me a full ride. Coach Noonan, I love him to death.
Yeah.
Shout out to Coach Noonan. Phenomenal coach. He's doing very well with Clemson right now. Incredible program they have there. He came and he's like, I want you to come to Clemson. And I was all for it. I was going to go to Clemson University. At that time as well, UNC Chapel Hill was interested in me. So mm-hmm. they wanted me as well because Enzo was there. So I guess he had to put in a word for me.
Yep.
My decision was going to go to Clemson. And we were making everything happen. Paperwork was there. But then a terrible situation happened that one of the agents that had helped me go to Barcelona that had the contact there, he went and he was upset because I wasn't going to keep doing tryouts.
Yep.
And I told him I don't have the money to do all these trials and stuff. So what he ended up doing was letting the league know that I had already signed a representation contract. So it kind of basically takes away my eligibility.
Yep.
And I was screwed at that point. I couldn't play collegiate sports anymore.
See, that's crazy. And I kind of knew something like that happened. I was like, I didn't know if he got paid or, but something came out that kind of ruined your eligibility.
It completely ruined my eligibility. I couldn't be in collegiate sports. Now, SNC was like, finish out your year, try to get as much credit as you can, this and that. I think there's an understanding of they thought that they had to kick me out. They never kicked me out. They took care of me.
Gotcha.
And so
I'd never heard that. So
yeah. So when this happens, Coach Noonan comes into the office at SMC and I'm crying and all this stuff, like, because I was like, I don't have a future now. Like, what am I going to do? And so I had bought a flight to Colombia on December 17th, 2011. And he's like, he basically changed my life because he's like, I've contacted Real Salt Lake and the MLS to come give you a look. So I flew to Arizona to the Academy of RSL when they had it there at Casa Grande and did a tryout from the 7th to the 10th. In these 3 days, I guess they saw enough. And then next thing you know, in January, I was getting drafted in the Super Draft.
Yeah.
As a random player. There's random. No one knew who I was.
You went random to us, though, man.
Yeah. It was random because, you know, in the Super Draft, everyone is from D1 colleges.
Yeah. You were the first player from
the ceremony. They have the ceremony there and this and that. And I was in Columbia just chilling, watching it with my family on a computer, trying to figure out what, because they didn't tell me they were going to draft me in the Super Draft. They just told me to watch it. And, yeah, it changed my life at that point. That's when I started my professional career.
Do you remember, like, your reaction? You know, I think it was the 36th pick. It was a Real Salt Lake
picks. I started crying. I couldn't believe it. I started jumping. I started crying. I was with my cousins. It was an unforgettable moment. I think that's when everything – that's kind of everyone took a weight off their shoulder, because my mom had always knew that was my dream. Mm-hmm. My family always knew that was my dream. But we were at that point where it was make it or leave it. It was kind of like that line that if this doesn't work out, what the hell are you going to do?
And, dude, again, I mean, you've – unbelievable player from the earliest ages, but it was not an easy road. And you could have given up so many times.
Oh, yeah.
But you didn't.
I think – you know, I was speaking to – I have a nephew. His name is Owen Thales. It's Miguel Edres' son. And so I call him my nephew. And I take him to training. I've been taking him to training these last couple of days. And I told him, I was like, we went to Croc Center. There's a nice turf field out there. And we were training. And I told him, you know what the difference was between me and all these guys? And he was like, no, and this and that. And I showed him, and I was like, there's a couple of kids that showed up in a car, and they came on the field. And they shot the ball about 15, 20 minutes. They were on their phones, this and that. And then they bounced. I said, I used to train my ass off. I used to be the one that would go to bed at 2 in the morning because I was playing either at CIS. Mm-hmm. I was playing wherever I could. I was always playing. There's just no stopping me when it came to that. And so I was like, that was the difference between me. I was like, I was just a go-getter. I was like, if I wanted something, I was going to go get it, and that's just what it was going to be. And so for some reason, that's always been my mentality, and that's why I've made it. I was like, if you want to really invest in yourself or invest in something you want, then you have to go and do whatever it takes mm-hmm. to go and succeed in that. And I remember people would tell me, you're in Greenville. There's no way you're going to make it out of Greenville. Who comes out of Greenville as a professional? And I wouldn't say anything, but I was like, in my mind, I know what I wanted.
Yeah. And dude, I mean, if you look at a lot of the greats, I feel like that's always their story. Like, I always had a ball at my feet, right? I always, no matter what, I was always doing something to get better. And think about how many people have so much talent and they don't use it, right? And like, God, I mean, there's so many athletes that if they would have had a better mindset like yourself, that just were like determined to make it and play at all times. I mean, it's kind of the way you have to make it if you want to get to that level.
I think that's the key. I think you just touched on something. It's just the mind. I think people are born with a talent. They're born with a gift. And I think people could see the talent that I had, but it was very easy to see that when I didn't try or when I wasn't training or I didn't do anything, because I don't think that people started realizing I was good until I was like 16. And that's when I was like my freshman year in high school. That's when I think people started realizing, okay, this kid is serious.
This is a different level. Like, this kid's at a different level.
This kid's at a different level. That's when I think people really realized that I had a talent. But I used to tell, like, friends, I think the biggest example for me is my best friend Miguel. I think Miguel was a baller.
Yeah.
I think Miguel had everything to be a professional by any means. Because I play with professionals every day, and there's guys that don't have the ability he has on the ball.
Yeah.
And
his center
of gravity is ridiculous. He's short. He's strong. He can play with both feet.
Yeah.
But he had the complete opposite of what I was, the mentality. And I tell him all the time, I was like, when you realized you wanted to be a pro and wanted to do the extra work, it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I started early. I started my, boom. When I went to Barcelona, I think that was my biggest, when I came back from Barcelona, there was nobody as good.
You had
as
seen me. A glimpse. You're like, holy shit.
For some reason, I saw that glimpse. When I remember, I will never remember the day I shook Pep Guardiola's hand and Tito Nova's hand. I wouldn't let go of Pep Guardiola's hand. It was the funniest thing. Steve Archibald had to use the restroom, and I'm waiting outside the door for him, and I just see they're about to go train on, there's at the Camp Nou,
yeah.
There's a field they have on the side where they can train and warm up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm standing beside the bathroom inside El Camp Nou. We're talking about one of the biggest stadiums in the world. And Steve and Pep Guardiola and Tito Villanoa, because that was his assistant at that time, they're jogging by and they see Steve come out. And I see him and my eyes just started like, I couldn't believe my eyes got big. And Steve was like, ah, viene el chico a probar. The kid is coming to train. And Pep was like, ah, este chico, mucho gusto, Pep Guardiola. And I'm like, and I wouldn't let him go. The cars these guys were driving, the lifestyle these guys had, the stadium, the atmosphere. I was in a VIP. They put me in a VIP booth to watch the game. It was Barcelona against Atletico Madrid. And Messi mm-hmm. scored a goal where he dribbled all the way diagonally. And he was supposed to pass it to Eto'o. Eto'o's by himself, but he didn't pass it. He just kind of like clipped it back the other way and scored. I'll never forget that goal. I saw that goal in person. And I was like, this is what I want for my life. And then my gear just shot up to eighth gear. And it I saw it. And I was like, it's a wrap after this.
Live Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Engineered Sleep. Engineered Sleep is a mattress manufacturer, and they are based out of Greenville, South Carolina. They have been making mattresses for as long as I can remember, and their main goal is to make finding the quality mattress for you as easy as possible. They have a showroom in Greenville, but you can also visit them at their website, engineeredsleep.com. If you go to their website, use code LIVE10, and you will get 10% off. As you guys know, sleep is the number one thing you need to focus on for good health. And it all starts with your mattress. So stop putting it on the back burner. Go get yourself a mattress from Engineered Sleep and start living a better life. And I mean, dude, when you get drafted, I think you started on the second division team for a second, or like the reserves for a few games, and then you get bumped up.
Is that No. I debuted the very first game.
Okay.
First game. So this is what happened. So I'm there. We're doing preseason, and coach is like, oh, I got to polish you up. This is your first year. I need to get you a part of the professional environment. For some odd reason, the four starting midfielders all got hurt. One had a hernia. One did his hamstring. One did this. One did that. They were all gone. And so then coach is like, without players. And so he had to put me in. And so next thing you know, I'm debuting March 10th, 2012. Yeah, March 10th, 2012 against LA Galaxy in LA.
Dang.
And I looked.
Beckham was there?
Yes. Beckham was on my side. So I look across the field and it's Edson Buttle, Robbie Keane, David Beckham, Landon Donovan, I think it's Zardes and Jorginho. And then they had Omar Gonzalez and they had a couple more guys in the back.
Because they were the first team to like start bringing those type of players over.
Oh, yeah. They were the team that had won 5 championships. They were the team.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. On top of that, I'm at that time was the Staples Center. And I'm like, this stadium, what in the world? And yeah, that's where the career started. And I did a play where I caused them an own goal where we tied it. And
I remember that. It's like a cross and
and someone tried to smack it out and it like kind of just went off their leg and went in. Tied 1-1, then we went off to beat them 3-1, and I got player of the match.
You scored that game.
But yeah, I got player of the match.
Nice. Hold on, you scored in the second game, right? Or you scored in the first game too?
No, it was just that game. That game, but they kind of like wanted to call his mind, but I knew it was like an own goal.
Yeah. I mean, you had some really good years at Real Salt Lake, right?
I had some incredible years at Real Salt Lake because I was so young. I was a part of a veteran team. My whole team was all veterans.
You had some legends on that team,
too. Oh, my God, dude. I had Beckerman was my holding mid. We had Ned Graveboy, Will Johnson. I had Javier Morales. I had Saborio, who's the leading goal scorer of Costa Rica. We had Espíndola, center backs. We had Nat Borchers. We had Olave, the best two defenders in the league for like two or three years straight. I had Tony Beltran on the right, and I had Chris Winger, who's my agent now. And then we have Nick Raimondo, who's the MLS legend. My team was stacked. And then you have three or four 20-year-olds, which was myself, Lee's Gill. They started bringing in some other guys after that.
What's dude, I mean, it's probably a tough moment for you at Real Salt Lake was the championship game, the PK.
Yeah. I think the worst moment in my soccer history that I've ever lived was that moment.
Yeah. Do you remember, and to kind of set it up for who's listening, Real Salt Lake makes it to the finals. It's last game of the year. They go to PKs. And was it tied 1-1?
So it was tied 1-1. No, 2-2.
2-2.
And both teams had failed three PKs. But both of us started scoring each PK, and then they miss, and then I'm up.
Yeah.
And so I go up to take the PK.
And you take tons of PKs.
I've scored tons of PKs, but I've missed PKs as well.
Sure. And everybody has. I mean, and so, Ronaldo, Messi, they all miss them.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a PK I took at training because obviously you practice them during the week. And it went in. And I'm like, all right, it's freezing on top of that. 7 degrees Fahrenheit, as cold as can be. I can't feel my feet. And I'm like, all right, just take the one you've taken that you scored this week, and let's get out of here with a championship. Mm-hmm. I went to go do that.
Inside keeper. Left?
Yeah, I went to keeper's left. I kind of wanted to cross to the go to cross. Obviously, I should have went the other side. Cause
it's all right. I remember watching that game, dude, and I was so proud of you, of how you reacted after that game, but really just your performance throughout the entire year in the playoffs. I was in a house with like Drew Deason and a bunch of boys over here watching you. And I mean, I know that was a hard time, right? But that's what makes you better, man.
It destroyed me for sure. It killed me. I can't, like, that stuff is just, that's the last thing you want, you know? Mm-hmm. Last thing you want is to be, like, if I could be, now this is the thing. I love moments like that. I live for moments like that. So
I would put you back in there.
When it was in there, they asked who wanted to take that PK, and I just,
me.
My hand up. I said, me, y'all let me take it. And it didn't work out.
But was that your last year with Real Salt Lake?
No. I was the next year. They changed coaches, and Jeff Cassar ended up being the coach, and so I was there for one more year. But then Jason Christ got the job at NYCFC the year after that, and he gave me a call and was like, I want you to come to NYCFC.
Talk about what you were going on with mentally during this point. Because, you know, we can get into it some, but I know you were having some tough times. What did it start with the PK? Do you remember?
So that became the moment where it went down here for me.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't sleep after that. It was ridiculous. Like, this is a game that has given me everything I've had. It's given me all great moments. To that point, I couldn't think of bad moments. Mm-hmm. That was the bad moment that I've had in my career where that was like, oh my God. I could have had an MLS championship in my hand on my second year as a pro. Like that was it. Like that was the moment. And I let it go. And so I'm the type of dude that beats myself up a lot when it comes to failure.
I'm similar in that way.
And so I think, And so I think the magnitude of that failure destroyed me because I've always been a people pleaser where I try to be the best I can be to please everyone, the team, whatever the case may be. I had basically just failed a whole city, a whole state.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I would have won, let's say I would have won that, who knows what could have happened at that point. I could have been called to the youth national team, all this stuff. And I mean, to the national team, because I was already getting calls to be put on the January camp with the national team. And so I just think it took a big turnaround. And so then I started abusing alcohol to a very bad extent. Like I went back home to Colombia and my alcohol drinking was ridiculous. It was excessive.
Yeah.
Like when I mean excessive, I started, as soon as I got off the flight, I started drinking. I was waking up drinking. I was throwing up drinking. It wasn't even like normal drinking. It's not like, okay, at night you're partying with friends and stuff. No, it was me by myself drinking.
Yeah.
My mother couldn't stop me. She would try to take shit away from me. I would go and try to go find it, or I would go somewhere and go buy it. It was ridiculous. It was a scary, scary scene. And I remember one day it got so bad that I was starting to throw up blood. And that's when it gets really scary. And she was like holding me. I remember she was tapping my head and I was so like messed up. And she's like, at this point, all I can do is pray for you, because if you're dead, well, I know at least why. And that stuff, it stuck with me. But at the end of the day, there was a problem going on for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't speak for what you were trying to do, but it was probably the feelings, right? Like when you get drunk, it might, those feelings of disappointment or, you know, what you felt in that moment, maybe after the PK, would go away for a little bit.
Yeah, it would just kind of easing the pain, I think.
Masking the pain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was just basically masking everything, because, like I said, every time I would think about that moment, it just haunted me. It was ridiculous. It was haunting the shit out of me. And I was like, if I could just go back, or why, or was this just a nightmare, or what the hell? What the hell just happened? Yeah. You know what's crazy? I didn't get to enjoy that moment. Because it was so cold and I walked up and I did it so quick. I wish I would have just took a couple deep breaths, look, analyze the situation, and then make a better decision. And I think that's how it works in life.
It is.
When you don't analyze a situation, or you're very impulsive and make one quick decision, shit can go south really quick.
And like you said, man, you beat yourself up way worse than, like for me, dude, I've been your friend for, I don't know, 15, 20 years now. Like, I was super proud of you. You know, but like you thought you had failed everybody.
Yeah,
you
know? Exactly.
Like you beat yourself up so much more than like the people that are proud of you.
Yeah, I destroyed my life at that point. I think.
What was the moment? Do you remember a moment where you got help and kind of flipped things around?
So when I went to New York City FC, things were going well. I was super happy and this and that. New city, playing with David Villa, playing with Lampard, all these guys. I'm on cloud nine.
Were you still drinking in New York?
I wasn't drinking as much. To be honest, I wasn't drinking as much. But when I wouldn't play or something, then I'd have a couple of drinks and stuff. The only thing was that when we would train on Sundays, and you know, Saturday nights is kind of like the night that sometimes I would go out with the guys, and then yeah, I would have drinks. So the next morning I would probably be smelling like alcohol. That was a big issue that I didn't know how to manage. I would just fucking do it and show up and smell like alcohol the next day. And so I think Coach one day definitely saw that I was drunk, and that was super embarrassing. But the biggest thing was I didn't get in trouble in New York. I think people think that I got in trouble in New York. I didn't get in trouble in New York. You know, everything was always fine. As long as I was coming to work and performing at training, because obviously if you're not performing, that's a different issue.
Yeah.
But I was performing at training. I'd also get jokes from guys and be like, yo, you kind of play better when you're a little lit from the night before. And so they would make jokes like that sometimes. But I didn't get in trouble in New York. What happened was I had gotten – when I was in Salt Lake in 2014. So this is what happened. I got a DUI in Utah. I got in a bad DUI. It was in April. I got in a lot of trouble for it. Obviously, and in Utah, that was a big no-no. And obviously, anywhere else is a big no-no. But it became a very public subject in the eye of the people in Utah. Then I went to a rehab for like 2 weeks. I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't believe I was like stuck somewhere. Like, I've always grown up with having no rules and this and that. I didn't care about what they were talking about and want anything to do with it. So I ended up, they let me out 2 weeks after. And they're like, are you sure you're going to be okay? I said, yes. I come back to Greenville for vacation, and I'm watching a game with Nacional. Nacional's losing in Copa Sudamericana against River, and I'm getting upset. Once again, this impulsive fact about me. And I'm getting upset, so I start drinking hard, and I'm by myself. It's not like I'm with anyone. I'm by myself. I get into the car. I start driving. I get another DUI. I got another DUI. And so that case, I got the best lawyer in on the East Coast. He's actually located here. And he took care of my case and got me out of all this trouble. But I had to hold that case for like a year. Like, we pushed it back. That way my because I got drafted. So I got in trouble on the 12th. Imagine that. And on the 13th, New York had announced that I was going to New York.
Dang.
So I couldn't announce that. There's no way in hell I could have I got arrested, because that would have been big trouble. So I hold that case, and I told them to tell the officers and all that to hold that case until about a year. That way, at least if it happens later, then at least I can tell them what the situation was, or it eases everything. So when I had to fly to Canada, they checked my my police report.
What were you flying to Canada for?
We had a game there. There's three teams.
Oh, Toronto, yeah, like Montreal or
Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver. They check my background, and then you see this case pending. And then they're like, what the hell is this? And I was like, listen, I had another DUI in 2014, yada, yada, yada. It was a wrap after that. I had to go to rehab for a month. And then from there, I made a decision because my son was born. My son was going to be born during that time. And I said, all right, you know what? I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm going to get my career back on track. And then once I'm ready to drink again, I'll make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when this sobriety thing started. I had a sobriety that lasted for 7 years.
Yeah. So when you were in New York and you're flying to Canada, the background report comes up. They find out. Did they help move you to another team? Did they kind of just drop you? What was like? Because you went back to Real Salt Lake, or went to Real Monarchs.
No, so this is what happened. That was a tough situation for me because when I came back, so I had been training in rehab. They got me a coach. The league took care of me. That's what's fun. I love the MLS. And the MLS takes care of you in situations like that. But what happened was they sent me to rehab. I come back and I'm balling at training because I'm skinny, I'm thin, I'm moving all over the place, I'm looking good. And they said they were going to offer me a contract extension for 2 more years. And I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. And then our coach got fired. Okay. Jason Christ got fired. And I think what they ended up doing, wanted to get rid of all the players he had brought. And so then they were like, stay for another week and then we'll finalize your contract. And then what ended up happening in that week, they're like, you know what, we're not gonna.
Dang.
And so that really sucked.
And when you went to rehab, that's when you made the decision to like, your son's born, you know, you're gonna get your life back on track.
Yeah, yeah. That's when I stopped everything, stopped drinking, all that. So I came back good, healthy, came back a new man. And you know, I didn't know the world of football to a certain extent. I didn't know the whole agents thing. I didn't know how all that worked. I didn't know basically contracts. I was just happy playing and getting paid.
Yeah.
But there's obviously a lot of things you can get out of it. You can get better contracts. You can get better bonuses. I didn't know any of that shit.
Yeah.
Because when I was in the MLS, I was making dog shit money, to be honest. I wasn't making good money. I think my first year, my second year, I was like making 33, then 34, then 40, 42, 40, something like that. And then they eventually pushed the minimum to up, a lot higher. Yeah. And so then I go to another team in Oklahoma, which that was a shit show. And that team fell apart. That team just completely.
Like Rio or something?
Rio, OKC, and they fell apart. And then I was like, I went to visit my son in Salt Lake City. Because I always have to visit my son. I'm not with my son's baby mother. I go and visit my son and Elliot Fall, who's the GM of Real Salt Lake. He's like, where are you? I'm like, oh, I'm here visiting my son. He's like, meet me at Starbucks. We met at Starbucks. He's like, we would love to have you at Real Monarchs. We're trying to do something special with the Monarchs. We want a good team for Monarchs. And if you do well, we'd love to push you up. And then I come back and then I'm in this USL league that I didn't really know.
Yeah.
And then, dude, I just killed it for the next 2 years. I had like 10 goals, 10 assists. Like first year, second year, I had 9 goals, like 4 assists. And I was the best attacking player. I got best 11.
Yeah.
Like I blew up, man. I blew up from there in that point.
And then, I mean, like you said, contracts, you're getting agents. And I don't think Chris might not have been your agent at this point. But then you go to South Korea.
I ended up in South Korea. Yeah. How did that happen? Nice. So
is that, did you get paid over there?
Yeah, I got that's where I realized where I was like, oh my God, I've just wasted 6 years of my career making pennies because
between me and you, the USL is great, but your skill levels, I think, you know, MLS are greater, right?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you what. So I go to Korea.
At this point in your career, for sure.
I go to Korea and, Things were going well until we just had a big issue with the fact that my lady during that time was pregnant, mm-hmm. Sophia, and she was going to have to leave.
and had
the was with you over there.
Yeah, she was with me over there, but she only had the opportunity to stay 3 months, and then I was gonna have to stay the whole year, and I didn't want her to go through her pregnancy by herself. So I spoke to the team, and I was like, I can't stay.
That mean, dude, that's. I think you made the right decision.
Yeah, I made. For me, at that point, I made the right decision. That's one thing. I'm a father before anything else. And so I'll do anything for my kid. That's why I was so happy to go into Monarchs, even though I wasn't on Real Salt Lake. I was happy to go into Monarchs because every day I was going to be able to see my son. Those 2 years with my son were golden. I think that's why I had the best two seasons of my career in those mm-hmm. times. I was with my son every day.
Yeah, that'll make a huge difference.
Oh, my goodness. It was unreal. I'll get out of training and go pick him up. It's like, it just doesn't get any better than that.
And, dude, how old is he now?
Seven.
Seven.
Dude is seven now. Yeah, he's nuts. He's crazy. And yeah, so I end up leaving Korea. I come back, and then I end up at El Paso.
And that's which they seem like they love you there, man.
Yeah, yeah. El Paso's amazing, dude. I don't know. It's a gym, dude. You never expect a place like El Paso. You hear El Paso, and you just hear a whole bunch of things, or you hear a lot about Juarez. El Paso's amazing. And so I bought my house there. Had some pretty 2019. I've had some pretty cool experiences getting to know the community and everything. And yeah, I bought a house there. So that's basically that's my home, dude. That is my home right now. So, you know what? I was thinking about this today. So they announced today that I'm coming back. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is when I've been at El Paso, I've came back from injuries, or I've come back from when I wasn't playing. Like in Korea, I wasn't playing. Went to El Paso for 5 months. Came back just now from Israel. Went to El Paso again. El Paso hasn't seen the player that I am. Mm-hmm. They'll see glimpses.
You've had some big moments for him, though.
Yeah, in short span. But they haven't seen a 1 year Sebastian like with a proper. I haven't gotten a proper. So this is what happened. I haven't had a proper rest in the past 2 years. I played at Miami. COVID hit. They stopped the season. Then they started again in July. COVID hit. I played the season out with Miami, 3 games every damn week. Then I went to Israel. They were already in season, continued that season. Then I got hurt, was out for 3 or 4 months. Went to El Paso again, continued that season, and then now we're here.
And you kind of got hurt at the end of this past
season. And I got hurt at the end of it, and it's because of that. If you don't get a proper preseason where you're doing the proper condition and all that.
Rest is huge.
And you know, rest is huge. That's the biggest. I didn't know rest was so big.
It's so big.
It's huge. The body has to recover. So when I come back, it's going to be interesting to see the type of player I am this year, because I have a mission this year. I have to make this work this year. And so it'll be interesting to see me with rest coming into a preseason, having a proper preseason, and then playing the season out.
When does preseason start?
Preseason starts. I think we're starting like January 20th or something. Like it's like in a month and a half.
Do you have any plans between now and then? I know me and you are both going to Colombia next week.
Yeah, dude, you're going to Colombia. I'm going to Colombia. Yeah, I'm going to go see my family. I haven't seen my mom in a long time. So yeah, and it's gonna be exciting.
Does a lot of like your family still live in Colombia with your mom?
Most of my family lives in Colombia. Almost everybody in my family.
In Medellin?
In Medellin.
Did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, Medellin. You got it right. It's LL, but it sounds like a J.
What I want to talk about Greenville High for a second.
Let's do it.
Do you remember those days?
Love Greenville High.
Do you have a moment that you remember the most back in the day?
Finals. When I went and scored the second goal, and we were losing. Did we start losing?
We went down 1-0.
Right? I tied 1-1.
Yeah.
And then the second goal, I go and jump on the top of the thing. There's a picture I've been trying to grab. I don't know who has it. Where I'm on the stand. Like, I'm on, like, a ledge. And it's all Greenville hands, and they're all going crazy. I would never forget that picture. But I don't know who has it.
We'll find it.
I think the Greenville High days were the best days of my like youth career. Those were, we would beat every team, but on top of that, we were all boys, because we were all boys from before even going to Greenville High. We were all boys from club soccer, from kickabouts, and all this and that.
We had to recruit you to get there, man.
Yeah, and you guys recruited me to get there, but it was so much fun, dude. And on top of that, I would remember when we didn't play soccer, we would go to the basketball games and get lit and get crunk, and then the football games and get lit. We were the guys back in the day.
I know, man.
I run into a lot of the guys from the basketball team, from like the football team. I'll run into them in Greenville,
some of them are even securities at some clubs and stuff. Nice. And they're like, this is my boy. He'll get me in with like 10 people I'm with.
There was a day in practice one time when he made our good friend Blair Rushing quit. I don't know if you remember that. Oh, my
God. When he was running his mouth that he could stop me. Because he was letting his head get blown up because he was the best defender in the league.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't stop me 1v1. He's like, yes, I can. So you remember? I remember that game. I remember that day thoroughly. Everyone lined up around the 18-yard box. Everyone had a ball, and I had to score more balls than he would defend, and I scored most of the balls.
Yeah, like we all had a ball on the outside of the 18, which it's like the 18-yard box around the goal, and we'd pass you a ball. You'd go 1-on-1. How that ended up, you'd get another ball. Go 1-on-1, get another ball.
And
go
would count how many goals.
I remember had to walk off.
He was so mad. I will never forget that.
He was, man. And, dude, throughout your career, you do have a pretty big following, right? And I feel like you're always trying to, like, give lessons to the younger soccer players, to the guys growing up trying to become a pro soccer player. Really, whatever, man. Just be successful in life. What are some of those messages that you think are key? Maybe you wish you would have known more back in the day? Or when you're talking to a, you know, 6-year-old guy that's has a ball at his feet, and he's like, hey, I want to play pro soccer. Like, what are you trying to tell him?
I think my biggest message is the key to success is discipline. It doesn't matter what you do. Like, it could be soccer, it could be football, it could be work, it could be a job in an office. If you're disciplined and you're responsible, you have a lot more points of being successful. You have a lot more chance of being successful than. So when I was growing up, I wasn't disciplined. I was responsible in the sense of my ability. I was responsible in the sense that I would in the games, I would do whatever it takes to win. But once I stepped off the field, there's a whole different animal that you have to be able to be responsible with or be disciplined with. And I think that was my biggest problem, that I dealt with so many things off the field that I think that's why soccer was kind of like my therapy. Mm-hmm. But I think for kids growing up, I think the temptations that comes with not just soccer or anything, the women, the money, the drinking, all these different things can literally destroy your dream, because until you're there, it's still a dream. Once you get into the pros, the same thing. I think the biggest thing that I've learned, it's easy to get there, which is hard to hear for people. It's easy to get there. It's hard to maintain and stay. Because if you think about it, there's millions and millions of people around the world that want the same job you have. Mm-hmm. Everyone dreams of being a professional soccer player.
Everybody's dream.
Everyone's dream. It's the same thing with every other sport.
Football player, baseball
whatever. Everyone's dream is to play a sport, train every day doing your sport, and getting paid tons of money. Mm-hmm. That's just what it comes down to. And so I think for kids that are out there, especially in the Greenville area, especially in areas where I've grown up, I know what it's like. You know, there's a lot of things out that can really throw you off, like can take away from your dream. Drugs, alcohol, we can be pretty straight up about it.
Yeah.
And I think if you just leave those things on the side for a big part of your life, soccer can give you so many things. I mean, once I changed my life around, And I changed my life around 7 years ago, and I stopped drinking and I stopped messing about. My life changed completely. Like you were saying, my did I get paid in Korea? I had a very good paycheck in Korea. I had a very good paycheck in Israel. I'm having a very good paycheck right now, even if I am in the USL. But all that comes was because I made one decision, and that one decision was to get rid of the rest and think about what the actual dream was, which mm-hmm. was to be a proper professional soccer player. And that's where I am now. I mean, at the end of the day, I think I still have a lot to succeed in. I'm on a mission now because I've realized that right now I'm not happy where I am as far as my success. I want to be even at a higher level, which I think I can do it. But that's something now. I have a responsibility. I have a mission that I'm on that I need to be able to conquer. And if I'm going to conquer it, I need to make the right decisions.
And Seabass, I mean, I fully believe in you, right? And I mean, I just want to thank you so much for coming by. This has been an incredible conversation. You've been so generous with your time. And as you're leaving it, man, is there anything you want to say to the people out there? Your sick kids, anything?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I'm going to bring something to Greenville. I have a project that I'm talking about. I've been talking to a couple of
very important people. One person that's very important, you know, Mr. Jimmy Orders.
Oh, yeah.
We've been having some conversations about something huge that I want to bring to Greenville. Obviously, I'm going to need the help of certain people, but this is going to be an opportunity for people to see what it's like to be a professional player, to train like a professional player, to live like a professional player, or see the things you need to be able to be a professional player and all these details that come into play of living the lifestyle of a professional player. So once this all comes out, and hopefully it does play out how I wanted to play out, I think it's going to be an awesome opportunity. And hopefully my dream is to get more professionals coming out of Greenville, more opportunity, more people to be seen in the shadows of maybe of cities that maybe get more opportunities than we do. So be in tune with that. And thanks for all the support, all the people in Greenville, all the people that have taken care of me when I was younger, all the people that have financially put their own money to help me to be successful. And to be honest, this is all for you guys. And just once again, I just want to thank you.
Seabass, thank you, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sammy. This is awesome, bro.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, click subscribe on your listening platform for upcoming conversations.